folding pocket.
Spring is here, and you can now get almost anything you need for your sunny days delivered with Uber Eats. What do we mean by almost? Well, you can't get a well-groomed lawn delivered, but you can get a chicken parmesan delivered. A cabana? That's a no. But a banana? That's a yes. A nice tan? Sorry. Nope. But a box fan? Happily, yes. A day of sunshine? No. A box of fine wines? Yes. Uber Eats can definitely get you that. Get almost anything delivered with Uber Eats. Order now. Alcohol in select markets. Product availability may vary by region. See app for details.
Hear that? Believe it or not, summer is just around the corner. Luckily, Armor All, America's most trusted auto appearance brand, has what your car needs to get that perfect summer shine. Plus, now through May 31st, we'll give you $5 for every $20 you spend on Armor All products. That means car wash pods, protectant, tire shine, you name it. Find out how to get your $5 rebate at armorall.com. Armor All, less work, more clean. Terms apply.
Hello and welcome to The Fast and the Curious with me, Betty Glover.
Me, Christian Hugill.
And me, Team Principal Greg James. But also...
Chloe Grant.
Hey! One of our regular driver co-hosts, Chloe Grant, is here, our correspondent on all things motor racing, but all things F1 Academy last season. How are you, Chloe?
I'm good, thank you. How are you?
Very well. The last time we hung out, we were all at Mercedes-Benz World.
I know.
Having a wonderful pre-Christmas time.
That was really good.
Loved it. We loved having you there. So what's been going on? What's been going on since December? Busy time.
So yes, pretty flat out. As they say, silly season, the off season as well. I've been training absolutely non-stop, getting a bit tired of it. But it's fantastic, you know, just in the gym every single day, sim every day. Really trying to work on my development and progression for the upcoming season. And of course, everyone's been asking the question of, oh, what are you doing this season? What are you doing? So I've never said this publicly before, but this year... I really want to do British F4.
Ooh. So, yes.
So British F4, however, currently I'm in the stage of raising sponsorship, which is obviously very difficult for people obviously involved in sports. They can understand it's quite challenging, especially when time is so limited. I mean, the official test is coming up very, very soon and it's kind of, a bit, we'll see what happens, but you know, it's...
In terms of money, having the funds to do it.
Exactly, in terms of money. But wow. I did do a test already, as I did kind of a little post on my story of that I was in Aragon, Spain, and people were like, someone messaged me and they were like, the anticipation.
What are you doing?
So this is an announcement. So you're doing, can you, for thickos like me, can you explain British F4?
So British F4, FIA F4, a championship that is all over the world in each different country, and British F4 in the name, it will be all in Britain, apart from one away round in Zandvoort, which is my favourite circuit.
Yeah, nice.
So yeah, it's hopefully, obviously, if we can get the season underway, get the correct support behind us, it's looking really good. I was really fast in testing, so...
Excellent.
That's good.
It's so interesting talking to you. We chatted on the phone a couple of months ago, and I said, what are you doing today? And he went, oh, I'm just going off to speak to some people to get, you know, to secure some funding. Like, sorry, you're the sports person. You're the star. You're the driver, but you're having to do this as well. I don't think people quite understand what everyone has to go through. Well, not everyone, but what some people have to go through in order just to get on the starting grid.
I mean, I remember on Monday, so I do, like I say, I do sim and gym every single day, plus on top of that I'm still trying to raise the money to actually go racing. But on Monday I was so flat out with trying to bring stuff together for potential sponsors and anybody who we could reach out to that I didn't, like, that was from probably like 8:30 in the morning until 6:00 I was doing that. I didn't have the time to, you know, quickly go on my sim and stuff, which was quite frustrating trying to find the balance. But at the same time, it's the sport I've chosen to do, and the love I have for it is so strong that I'm going to give it my absolute all. And, you know, I do have to treat it like a job. It is my job. So, yeah, it's tough, but it's very challenging. But, of course, I kind of, in a way, wouldn't rather it be any other way, because I wouldn't rather be in any other sport.
It's something we share in common, Chloe. We've spoken on this podcast before about I used to race karts when I was young.
What?
Didn't know that. Karts?
When?
Did you? Christian!
No, go on. Funding.
Chloe. And obviously, my parents were heroic when I was racing karts because Dad found me sponsorship we also, when we were at the race weekends, my mum like effectively ran a clothing business while we were at the track, selling clothes to fund my racing.
Sorry, really?
Yeah.
What were you selling? I'm sorry. What did you mean? What do you mean?
I don't know how best to describe clothes.
No, I'm just trying to, like, who's buying the... How many people were there watching?
What clothes?
What clothes?
A brand of clothing.
Oh, I see. I thought you... Sorry, in my head, she's like made clothes.
Yeah.
To go...
Yes, Greg. She sat and knitted clothes.
Like just merch. Selling... I thought she was selling Christian Hugill merch.
Selling all of Christian's hand-me-downs.
I thought you meant she was like selling Hugill merch.
No.
Like, which I would
there
buy.
There was a brand of clothing that gave us the rights... to sell
I
their
see.
Clothing.
Right. Well, that's very enterprising.
So we had the rights to sell this particular motorsport brand of clothing at kart races in the UK. That was a business in its own right that funded my racing.
Wow.
Alongside
giving me some ideas.
Sponsorship.
Yeah, have you thought about making some clothes?
Again, I must reemphasize, we didn't make the clothes. Someone else made the clothes. Anyway.
Pairs of Christian Hugill socks.
I'm just thinking, Christian's hand-me-downs, pair of socks that he's worn, his old pyjamas, yeah. Wedding ring.
We're trying to raise money for some tyres. I've got his old hat.
Never thought
anybody
this would be this difficult
sock.
To explain.
His old ballet shoes.
That wasn't my clothes. It wasn't Christian Hugill clothes. My mum didn't make the clothes.
Christian Hugill's running trainers.
No. Again... It was a brand of clothes that they were, you know, like you buy in the shops, yes. Like a make of clothes.
Right.
Like Peruna from Marks and Spencer's.
We're giving him hassle, but he's
no,
done
no,
a
this
good
is,
job.
We're making.
Yeah,
like,
no, it's a serious point, isn't it? That my mum knitted clothes and my old socks this old. It's a serious point.
Well, that's
yeah.
a funny point. No, that's sure. a funny image. But it's a serious point, is that it's very difficult if you don't have. Money given
well,
to you or family a, wealth yeah. or whatever.
It's such a privileged sport, isn't it?
Yeah. And then one day we got a flyer and it wasn't just me. There was other drivers that had this basically saying like, you know, you're one of these drivers that have been around a while and do you want to do a test in a Formula 4 car, which is what Chloe years later is going into race. That opportunity to do that test would have cost us about three times what we spent on my racing in a season. And that was with sponsorship and setting up an actual business to fund
wow.
my racing, and it was still nowhere near achievable for us. That was the moment where I was like, this is pointless, isn't it?
Yeah, when you move into the world of cars, especially single seaters, as some people you just cannot compete against, and it's so difficult. And that's why, like I said, I do have to treat this like a job, because I'm trying to compete with some people that, you know, I just... Their families are at such a different level compared to mine. And even with my parents work so, so hard, but we still just can't, we're still not anywhere near what they have managed to get as well. So we obviously, like I said, we have to go elsewhere to try find the funding for what we do rather than it being out of our pockets, because it's physically impossible for it to be out of our own. So yeah, it's so hard to compete in, but when you want to be in the sport, and I honestly, like, I don't mean to sound dramatic, but I genuinely don't know what I would do without it. And people are like, oh, well, you'll probably end up being something else anyways, but okay, but I
want
to take driving as far as I can right now, and I'm nowhere near done.
Who's getting the? Where's this money going? Who's getting what? How, what?
You
that?
Just that's
for who? Who's
that's
getting
just,
it?
You pay that to the team, and then you race, and that's for a certain amount of test days, whatever's included in your deal.
Yeah.
With usually two new sets of tires per test day. Obviously all the race rounds, and yeah, that and that usually includes insurance, but that doesn't even include damage. So if you have a crash, it's going to be more.
So you're paying the wages of the team.
Basically.
Of the mechanics and the everyone else.
And you're
else.
Getting their skills, and you're getting yeah. their ability to set up
yeah,
your car.
Yeah, exactly.
And you're getting their logistics, and often you're getting the vehicle.
In a way, you kind of are paying the team for a service.
Yeah.
I mean, you do have, then even then, that's just F4 as a junior like category. Then you have F3 and you're paying over 1 million. Then you have F2, you're paying over 2 million. And yes, some drivers have subsidised drives depending on their skills. Like I know of a driver in F3 who the team that he's with believe in him so much that they have, he's actually not paying nearly as much as other drivers purely because of his skill, which is very rare, but it's really nice to see that some junior teams are still able to do this.
Well, it does happen. And we should say at this point, everybody in Formula One has an unbelievable level of talent. You don't become a Formula One driver. And I'll say a name, that people are very lazy in throwing out, oh, he's only there because of his dad's money, Lance Stroll. No, Lance has had a good career in Formula One, and you need talent to drive those cars. But everybody in Formula One has either had family who can afford to finance their racing, or, in Lewis Hamilton's case, for example, has managed to find ways of funding that. So Lewis' very well-publicised route was he went up to the former McLaren CEO, Ron Dennis, and said, I want to race for you. And McLaren funded his career early doors. Now, there are other examples. Take, for example, Mark Webber. His book's fascinating if you ever get the chance to read it. You know, he, again, from very humble backgrounds in Australia and found ways of funding his racing. But the fact that you're only going to make it to Formula One if you've either got a rich family or have found rich backers and been lucky enough to get rich backers is something that lots of people, Corinne Chandock spoke to us about it the other week, would like to see a more level playing field at the grassroots of karting.
I mean, in all fairness, sorry, I have seen a lot more recently, like sort of Williams, Alpine and McLaren have been developing a lot more into junior drivers, and which is fantastic to see. But then again, it's also a very small amount of number of drivers. You know, some drivers get missed here and there, but at the end of the day, it is what it is. But it's still fantastic to see them all take that huge step up and have quite a large amount of drivers between them all. And yeah, even likes of Mercedes, I mean, they've taken on Kimi Antonelli since, I don't even know how many years now they've had him on board. And in all fairness, he's been an incredible driver. He won Italian F4. Last year, he won Formula Regional Championship. And some people potentially think he might take Hamilton's seat in 2025, which is, I mean, that's unbelievable to think. 1 year in F2 and then already straight into Formula One. But never say never. And he has proven he's an incredible talent. So likes of Mercedes supporting him has been fantastic because he is pure talent. So yeah, hopefully there's more drivers that get that kind of opportunity.
Chloe, we believe in you.
Thank you.
And we know the listeners believe in you. And there, as I said, you never know who's listening. There might be someone who comes along and goes, you know what? We're going to back Chloe Grant.
And listen, Fast Curious Pod on Instagram. Like, we'll put you in touch with Chloe. Mm. Genuinely, get in touch.
Yeah.
It would genuinely mean the world. I mean, it's kind of, not to sound very black and white, but it is the make or break, to be honest. And obviously, I've been looking at the British F4 grid for this season, and I think it's going to be completely full. It's going to be probably double what I was competing in last year. It's going to be difficult, but it honestly makes me more excited to be a part of it. Hopefully we can get on the grid and be quick.
And we can't wait to follow your progress as well. I mean, by the way, this chat has been so interesting. We haven't even talked about what's happening on today's show.
I know. I just got completely carried away.
We've gone straight into it, but I love that. So Betty, what is happening on the rest of the show?
Well, we're obviously into race week two of the Formula One season. So it's heading to Jeddah for the Saudi Arabia Grand Prix, and the F1 Academy is also joining them. So we're going to be previewing that. So Chloe, obviously you know the inside scoop on the F1 Academy because you raced in it last season. And we're also going to be hearing from Red Bull's Formula One Academy drivers, Hamda Al-Kubaisi and Emily De Hoos. Their opening weekend of the season also coincides with International Women's Day. So we're going to be also catching up with our friend of the show, Sophie Ork, who's McLaren's Formula One Head of Communications.
Betty, you chickened out of doing your International Women's Day jingle, which you've been working on behind the scenes here. It went through pre-season testing, didn't it, with your two race directors, Christian and I.
Vigorous race programme.
Earlier on. So would you like to debut the International Women's Day jingle?
International Women's Day. Was it that? That was quite high pitched, wasn't it?
You can't say that. You're a man. You're a horrible, toxic man like me.
I've got a chest infection. I can't sing. That was a crap jingle.
Okay, let's go again.
And listen, I know jingles. McLaren News has become a viral sensation, right? There's one thing I'm licensed to comment on. It's jingles.
Yeah, fair enough.
What was it? Can anyone remember? Because I did sing it ages ago.
I wouldn't dare tell a woman. I wouldn't mansplain what the International Women's Day jingle is.
No.
Oh, Greg.
So come on.
International? No, I don't know what it is. I can't sing.
You
also
make up. It's whatever you want it to be.
But this podcast does not move on any further.
I've got a chest infection, and they're making me sing, and I'm not happy about it.
You've got to perform at the top level in motorsport. No chest infection.
No margins.
Excuses. Chloe doesn't get in the car and go, I've got a chest infection. She performs.
This man's jingle went viral.
Chloe, don't laugh. Chloe, don't laugh at him. Don't encourage this behaviour. You're supposed to be on my side here,
mate. Yeah, because I never guessed it.
You never guessed it. No, you don't. International Women's Day.
That was it.
That was good.
That was better. That was good.
That's the one.
Okay, join us next week on the Fast and the Curious.
Chloe, we are in our new studio. You're one of our, you are our first in-person guest. And you immediately looked at these this lovely set of Pirellis.
I did, because that's what I drive on.
Is it?
Oh, do you want them?
Well, no, because we're changing the first episode. We are changing this year the Pirelli tire for, I don't know if it's all F4 championships, but for British, we changed actually kind of tire compound, but also the Pirelli tire just changes slightly. Quite interesting, actually, to get, well, once we do more testing and running on that, to see the full difference.
Greg loves
but
tire
yeah, that's,
chat.
This is what I drove on last year in F1 Academy.
Oh, so,
yeah. You can't sell the tires in... The well, second episode
if,
of us being
know,
in the
it,
studio.
It will help out.
Well, I think I, just... I felt like Betty was giving tires to Chloe. Things aren't that hard up. Like, she doesn't need our tires from me.
Do
either.
You want that helmet as well, Chloe?
Stop giving away the set we've only just moved in.
No, but you do need to sign the helmet.
You do need to sign the helmet.
Would you like to sign the helmet?
I'd
You're
love
our first signature.
To. I'd love to.
All right.
Can I just sign the whole helmet?
There's a pen up there. We'll leave a little bit of space because... Hopefully we will have other guests in here.
Betty made such an old woman noise as she got up from the seat. Did you hear that?
Oh.
There's the helmet.
Thank you.
Where did we... Oh, that smells so nice. Did you smell
No helmet
that?
Smell.
It smells
yeah,
old.
Yeah, it's a new helmet smell.
Old heads.
Right.
I think it's a new helmet.
Where,
though,
where would you like me to sign
Wherever
it?
Wherever you feel like you should sign it. This gives
does
us
it,
a great...
Does it get... So, we'll do here.
I'd gain how, so how much big? Respect for Chloe if she just drew a...
Gretchen.
So funny, wasn't it? Brand new helmet in permanent marker. Could you imagine?
Is there a restriction of how big I can do this?
Well, it's interesting. This is a good insight into your personality of where you choose to sign and how big it is. And
where it can get shown.
Yeah, yeah.
We'll try here.
Go for the side.
Is the first side.
Well, that's quite big. I'm really sorry.
No, it's all right. Again, we're not expecting many guests in, so go mad. And then at the end of the year, when the whole project's been a failure, it won't look as empty if you've done it quite big.
I'll do a little smiley face.
And conversely, if we get loads of people, we can always just sort of use a bit of white spirit to get rid of it.
Oh, that's great.
I have a very boring signature. Everyone else, I see them like when we do signings, they go like that really quick. And I'm like, give me a minute.
Yeah, that's nice.
Like, really
that's
solid.
Really nice.
That's really
Well, that's
nice.
Because you're hideously young. So you were at school quite recently.
And the A, for people who don't know, my middle name is Anna. That's why Anna. I do CA Grant. Thank you.
And I'm putting it back on the shelf, but I'm going to put it with Chloe's signature facing look like Aww. That.
Lovely. That's nice.
Just next to the nice plastic potted plant. It is plastic. It's a secret, a trade secret. I'll put the pen under it like that. There we go.
Lovely. A round of applause Happy for days. The helmet. And now the helmet that Chloe just signed. Will it ever get old? Will that ever get old? Christian's little sad dog face will never get old.
Shall we get on to the F1 Academy then?
Yeah.
Okay, so it's obviously alongside a Formula One race every single race this season. Mm-hmm. You raced in Texas last season, didn't you? And that was alongside the Grand Prix, the Formula One Grand Prix. Did you see much of a benefit from that?
Yes, definitely. Obviously, again, exposure-wise. And getting to interact with the fans more. Obviously, because a lot more of them come and they, instead of, you know, them going to just an F1 race and an F1 Academy race, it's obviously it's really nice that they had it mixed for COTA and they will have it mixed for the season as well. That yeah, it was ran perfectly, the schedule ran really well and professionally. But then to get that time after to go and see the fans and interact with them much closer up, and in an area that obviously Formula One weren't there, I definitely think there wouldn't have been as much of them. So yeah, it was really, really nice. And I think it'll be really exciting for all of the girls this year to get to have that every round.
So yeah, this weekend alongside the Saudi Arabian Grand Prix is also the first F1 Academy race of the year. Very excitingly, you're going to be able to watch it all on Sky Sports F1 in the UK, on your local provider if you're listening to this around the world. Also, there's highlights on the Formula One website, so it's extremely more accessible to watch, unlike last year, which is exciting. And not only are we going to have Chloe for your thoughts on it throughout the season, but we've also made a couple of other F1 Academy friends. We've been speaking to two of the drivers.
Hi, my name is Emily De Hoos. I will be driving for Red Bull in F1 Academy.
Hi, my name is Hamda Al-Kubaisi. I'll be racing for Red Bull Racing in F1 Academy.
Is that quite a surreal thing for you both to be saying? Like, can you quite believe that you're going to be racing for Red Bull Academy?
Well, in the beginning, I didn't believe myself, but now I'm standing here and yeah, you see this, it's getting real now. So yeah.
Yeah, I think when I first got the call, it was an amazing feeling, and I didn't expect to get the contract immediately and to sign it straight away. It was, yeah, an amazing feeling. It's unbelievable and like a dream come true.
There's one thing we've learned from motorsport is that if you put the Red Bull logo on a car, it tends to go really well. Are you worried, therefore, it'll be too easy this year because you're in Red Bulls? Even, all right, they might officially be the same, but it must just be the magic of the logo. Is it all going to be quite a walk in the park, just like F1 is?
Red Bull gives you wings, right?
So. Exactly.
Slip that in. Tick.
Yeah. I mean, but in all seriousness, you know, they're gathering together some of the world's most talented young drivers. It must be cool to be a part of that crop, but I bet it's going to be a competitive season.
Yeah, I think it will be really competitive this year, but still I'm ready to fight for this season. So
yeah, I think the same, you know, representing the navy blue colors and to be there on track alongside F1, it's a big thing. And yeah, we're just excited to get started.
And talk to me about your relationship then as drivers, because obviously you've been driving together for in the same team before, haven't you? How do you get on? What's that sort of rivalry, but also friendship like between you both?
Well, we saw in the media that we are sisters now.
Apparently people think we're sisters, so.
That's right, you're into the family now, yeah. That's right.
Exactly.
No, we get along really well, and but on the track we still fight with each other.
Yeah, I think.
But yeah.
Yeah, we have that competitiveness, but, you know, off track, we're really good friends and we work well as a team, I would say.
Yeah.
I just wonder what it was like growing up as racing fans. But I grew up as a motorsport fan and I barely saw any women racing. I used to race karts and probably race against one female driver in like 5 years. How does it feel knowing that there are going to be girls 5, 6, 7, 8 getting their first taste of motorsport and as part of an F1 weekend, seeing you race? I just love it so much. How does it feel for you guys? You know, you're trailblazers in this category.
I think, you know, it's an amazing feeling. And for me as an Arab female, you know, we break a lot of boundaries and we create a lot of opportunities for Arab female in our region. And a lot of them are getting into the sport now because of us. And, you know, it's an amazing feeling. And I get a lot of messages also from them. You know, they say, oh, because of you, my father lets me race now. Or, you know, I'm getting into motorsport now. So, it's just
lovely.
An amazing feeling. Yeah.
I was going to ask about the messages because you're obviously inspiring so many young girls. Do you get many messages as well?
Yeah, sometimes. And when I go to my local karting track where I started, there's like some karting lessons in the winter for little kids. I was always the only girl and now I see more girls, and when I look there and they look at me, I'm like, yeah, I know how they feel.
Something we talk to new F1 drivers about a lot. For example, Oscar Piastri was one of the first drivers we had in the podcast, and he barely met anyone on the F1 grid when we first got. So I was like, yeah, no, I've never met Lewis Hamilton, I don't know these people. How many people do you know who you'll be racing against? Because you're obviously going to be like Formula One, traveling around the world with them. It's like a bit of a traveling circus. How many have you met? Or are you still going to be having like, oh, hey, nice to meet you in the first race of the season?
I mean, we know some of them from last year. We competed against them as well. So, yeah, we know a few of them, but there's a lot of new faces. And yeah, we're excited to get to know them and, you know, for sure compete against them on track as well.
Obviously, you were on the F1 circuit in Texas. That was sort of your first opportunity to be part of that ridiculous circus. Do you think that's going to put you in good stead for this coming season?
Yeah, I think, you know, in Austin, it was finally live streamed and, you know, we could finally feel how it was to be alongside F1. And, you know, we had all these eyes on us. So it was a good taste of what it would be like this year. And I'm pretty sure it's going to be even bigger this year. So, yeah, it was good to get to know how it would be.
Yeah, and I think it's good because when you drive Formula 4 or Formula 3, you always want to do a championship on Formula 1 tracks. And now we have only tracks, but there are Formula 1 tracks, so yeah.
And obviously round one, Jeddah, right round the corner now, so close. How's the excitement feeling ahead of round one? And also, it's such a cool track, the long straights. It's already provided some great racing in F1. You both must be excited to get on that track.
Yeah, you know, I'm really excited. Again, it's in Saudi Arabia in the GCC, so... yeah, it's only a 2-hour flight from where I live, so it's really nice.
Fantastic.
Yeah,
no jet lag.
Yeah, no jet lag. No,
yeah,
I'll
lunch.
Feel like home, and yeah,
great.
Yeah, it's great.
And you must be excited about the track because it's a really cool track. They've done a really good
really
job.
Yeah, I'm really excited. I cannot wait to drive there.
Well, listen, as soon as we get drivers on the Fast and the Curious. We become their biggest fans. So we'll be keeping an eye out for both of you this season. We hope it goes really well.
Well, that's a lovely chat with Hamda and Emily. Well done to you both.
Thanks, Greg.
And while we were listening to that, what you pointed to your wrist, Chloe. What's going on here?
Yes, so I have this little, like, turtle bracelet. And I have it. Hamda and Lena Buller, my teammate from last year as well, we all got it when, just after the testing in Paul Ricard last season, we all went and stayed in a house together in France and had a little nice relaxing weekend together. Aww. And got to watch some racing as well. We all went down to I've forgotten the name of the exact town, but we went to the beach and along there was some little shops and in it we found these little bracelets. And now Amna tied this to me in almost like June, July last year, and I've not taken it off since.
Oh, that's nice.
Oh,
I mean, that's actually an interesting thing in my old man brain, which has just gone off, which is, I think you're answering the question, but are you able to also be an 18-year-old in the world and do things that normal 18-year-olds do that aren't just doing racing?
So this is kind of what a lot of people have asked me recently, because obviously it's, you know, I'm turning 18 next month, and everyone's like, oh, so what are you going to do for your birthday? Are you going to go out? And I was like, oh, no, I'll probably just be, I don't know, at home with my family, you know, get my favourite meal, that's about it. Because I'm not really fussed to do the whole clubbing thing either.
No, I don't necessarily mean that. No. I just mean doing like a nice weekend away with your mates.
Oh, yeah.
farting around in France or whatever.
Yeah, I think when I was 18, I was going to like Magaluf or something. So don't go down that route.
Definitely won't be me. I just, even without being in the sport, I don't really have a massive interest in that. Yeah. Hopefully on my birthday, I'm actually testing at Brands Hatch.
See, that's the thing. That's the difference between you and normal 18
years. The past 2 years, last year on my birthday when I turned 17, I was testing in Barcelona. Year before, I was testing at Knockhill Racing Circuit when I turned 16. So hopefully when I'm turning 18, I'm at Brands Hatch is the goal. Hopefully, like I said, we get the partners behind us. But I'll probably just be having my favourite meal with my family and that will be about it.
This is it though. I mean, we talk about the Formula One drivers through the years. They are essentially child stars. They are movie stars, or you sort of find fame and success at an early age. And that has an impact on your later life. And, you know, you didn't have that time to make those mistakes behind closed doors because you're on a race circuit doing all this stuff. Do you feel like there are... welfare people around you? Are there those people that help guide you through actual life at the same time?
Yeah, definitely. I mean, obviously being in F1 Academy last year, the public eye sees you a lot more. And like you say, there's not a lot of room for error, not a lot of room for mistakes because people are keeping such a close eye on you. And also quickly just kind of coming back to F1 Academy, I'm really, really sad to not be in it this season, but obviously I'll be watching F1 Academy with a close eye. I've seen some of the testing results and it's looking quite interesting. And obviously I've got close friends in it that I'm rooting for and I hope they succeed very much.
And that's part of today's podcast, is previewing the new season. Exciting opening round. Saudi Arabia is a really exciting track, a fast track, a street circuit, a challenging track. Is there anyone at this very early stage? And this is your, you know, we've said you're our F1 F1 Academy correspondent, Chloe. This is maybe your first challenge in that role.
Yes.
Anyone who you've got your eye on this year? Anyone you think you're tipping to do well?
I think I could name the champion.
Go on.
Dorian Penn. Dorian, well, I think she's been, I mean, I've seen results and she is unbelievably fast. She even did F4 UAE and that is a tough, tough grid, and she did really, really good in that. Dorian, I want to say 19. That could possibly be wrong, but I think she's 18, 19, I think.
Wow.
But yeah.
And well, that will be a test, Chloe, because obviously now you're in the world of punditry as well as driving. That'll see whether you get to keep your F1 Academy correspondent role into the 2025 season,
also,
because we'll obviously see whether your prediction was right. And
also, I'm really, really sorry. Jess, I love you. Hamda, I love you. Emily, I love you. Amna, I love you. I love all of you so much.
She's on the phone now. She wants to take off that friendship bracelet, actually.
No, I think all of them will be so successful still. And obviously, it'll be nice to see Leah Block obviously coming into it as well now. I mean, she's making a huge transition. So she's going to have, we'll hopefully see a really nice progression from the start to the end of the season for Leah. And Jess Edgar is my closest friend. And I honestly, if I could choose anyone to win, I would choose Jess to win. But I do think, looking at results currently, I think Dorian or Maya is very, very close into the, you know, get being the champion.
Betty, you do a lot of actual sports presenting as well as this podcast, don't you? Good punditry though, isn't it? Straight in, we ask her a question, straight away an answer. Brilliant.
Yeah, do you know what? The amount of times you ask a pundit, especially in football, like who do you think is going to win, or like who should we be looking out for, or what's your prediction? They just sit on the fence.
Straight in, Chloe.
All the time. Whereas yeah. Chloe, honest. She's there. She
great
knows exactly
start to the season for Chloe.
Well, honest, and also, I don't, this might sound patronising, incredibly mature that you are able to put aside your disappointment to say, also, I really do hope that they do well.
Yeah,
I think
that's
an amazing attitude to have. And I think that will serve you so well in your career. When any bitterness creeps in any career, it's always sort of game over. So that attitude is amazing.
Yeah, some paths are just not made for some people. And unfortunately, that path wasn't made for me. But I'm still really excited to see, you know, my friend succeed in that world. And I'm actually really looking forward to watching the racing, especially with so many new faces in it now. But of course, my closest friends who have had my back. I mean, even in COSA, when I was kind of struggling a bit with not knowing what I was going to be doing and they were all kind of sorted, they really had my back, and they've been a fantastic support to me. So I can't wait to hopefully support them from the sidelines as
amazing.
Well now.
So the first F1 Academy race coincides with International Women's Day.
Sorry, what does it coincide with?
International Women's Day!
Better, right? Yeah,
I owned it a bit then, didn't I? Yeah, that sounded a little bit fantastic. Better.
I still misheard. International...
No. That was
no one needs to hear that again, do they? So we thought this would be a great opportunity to get one of our mates on in the sport, who we've worked with quite closely. She's never been in front of the microphone before, always behind the microphone. It's Sophie Ogg, McLaren's F1 Head of Communications. And McLaren are also one of the leading teams when it comes to diversity and inclusion. So we thought we'd have a quick chat with her. Sophie, welcome to the Fast and the Curious. Usually you're behind the scenes, sort of listening to us interview your drivers. Now you are on the actual episode. How do you feel?
Yeah, I'm not going to lie. I definitely prefer being behind the camera and just telling people what to say. But thank you for having me. It's really lovely to be on and I do appreciate that. So be nice.
Sophie, you have a fantastically interesting job. Talk the listeners through what it is you do.
So my job, I'm comms director here at McLaren, and it's really hard to sum up when people say, like, what do you do? It's really difficult to kind of sum up in a nutshell what the job involves because there's so many different things that get thrown into it. But I think the main focus is being the link between the F1 team and the media. And that's kind of the primary function. And then everything else kind of goes around that. So whether it's preparing and briefing and managing, you know, our spokespeople, our drivers, to actually talking to the media themselves, and making sure that they have the access that they need, making sure they have the information that they need. And that's basically in good times and bad as well. So, you know, while things are going well, you're actively trying to encourage more media. And when things are going bad, you're obviously just trying to manage the narrative and making sure that people have the facts.
Sophie, one of the things that surprised me most about Formula One and that I didn't realise until I was sort of involved in the world of Formula One is the logistics. And obviously we're in a time when Formula One's more popular than it's been, say, a decade ago. There's more Formula One media. There's even podcasts about Formula One, can you believe? And you have such a massive part of that logistics. There must be such a lot to juggle because I was amazed at the sort of workload on you guys over the weekend. It's not just the drivers that work hard. Teams like you work so hard. How difficult is all that to manage?
Yeah, it's... You have to be super organized. I think that's one of the key kind of things in this job and in this role, because you are juggling and you're spinning plates all the time. I mean, the driver schedules that we manage over race weekend are broken down into 5-minute intervals. So everything is kind of mapped out to the second. So when we're trying to kind of push a driver onto the next thing, it's not because we're being really difficult. It's because we genuinely have these kind of small blocks that we're working to make sure the drivers get everything done that they need to and are prepared and focused when they're obviously needing to get in the car or work with their engineers. Whilst you're planning the first race of the season, you're also looking ahead to Miami and to Monaco and to Silverstone. And even, you know, I've had conversations about Austin and then everything in between. So like you're constantly kind of going from one thing to another, but everything does come together and everybody, it's a proper team team effort, I would say.
Sophie, obviously Formula One is quite a male-dominated sport, but there's people like you that are in these big positions in teams, such like iconic teams like McLaren. Firstly, how did you get this job? How did you end up in this position?
So I started when I was about, honestly, 14 or 15, and my dad took me to a British touring car race. I think it was at Alton Park in the UK. And he wasn't working in it. He just got offered tickets, and I went along with him. And I was just absolutely hooked on just the smell, the sound, just the whole atmosphere of being at a racetrack, and just literally turned around to him and said, like, I want to do this. And I had no idea what job to do in motorsport. I just knew I wanted to work in motorsport. And originally I wanted to be an engineer. So I got a job just for free on a race weekend, helping a local race team. And that was basically my foot in the door. And then from that, I met people. I started learning about the different careers. Because back then as well, I mean, you didn't have social media, which ages me a little bit, but there was no social media. There wasn't really a lot on the internet that you could find out. So I didn't know anything about all the jobs available. And then eventually just went through about 10 years of various other different motorsport before I finally came into Formula One. And Formula One was never really the goal. It was, you know, working in the sport. That was what I loved doing. But then an opportunity at Williams came up and I thought, well, you know, now or never if I'm going to do it. And then got the job there and just gradually kind of worked through the ranks for, what, 11, 12 years there before then heading over to McLaren. So it's been a good few years of hard graft. But I wouldn't do it if I didn't love it, so I don't mind.
Just to build on what Betty said about it being a male-dominated sport industry, have you noticed a shift since you've been there? Not just at McLaren, but in the sport in general. I mean, there was that slightly devastating statistic from the latest series of Drive to Survive, which was something like 2.5% of the airtime was filled by...
Well, the last series, with the one before,
By women, which
this,
is...
This series was 3%.
This series was 3%. Well, that's an increase. Are you not happy, Betty? That's a 1% increase. But no, Ben, that is devastating, and that is essentially. But have you noticed, even if it's just in the paddock in your local area, I guess, have you noticed a change over the last few years?
Yeah, massively, 100%, especially from when I first started. I mean, when I first started in motorsport, pretty much every girl that you'd see in the paddock was either just a grid girl, or that was kind of like it. It was kind of a bit unheard of to do any other job. And so when I was kind of there, I remember in some of the smaller paddocks, I was literally like one of the only girls around. Like, you just wouldn't see any of the women, which kind of didn't bother me because I don't know, for some reason I didn't see that as an issue. I was kind of like, well, I don't care because this is what I want to do. Whereas now I think it's not only that there's more women, but there's more women in every area. So, you know, you have women in engineering roles, you have women in catering teams, marketing teams, PR, like driving, like strategy, mechanics. Like, you literally, you'll see them everywhere. You look in every garage. And I think it's great because then every time somebody else kind of comes into the sport, as a female in particular, it's just another role model for somebody else to go, okay, yeah, that's a job as well. And that's actually something I could do. And definitely going in the right direction, but still a huge amount of work to do, I think, to make women feel that they can be kind of comfortable and that this, they'll be accepted, I guess, into this. But strides ahead of where it was like 25 years ago when I first tried to get in.
I just want to get an insight. I want you to give an insight to the listeners of what it's like balancing your role between Oscar and Lando, because those are two very different people at different stages of their career. How do you manage your time with both of them to make sure that they both get enough og?
You're implying that they both want that much og, but I think it's a good question, and it's actually one thing that I do try and balance, because we are one team, and you know, they're obviously in the car and they've got their own kind of races to run. But, you know, as a team, like me and my whole comms team, you know, we work across both drivers, and they are very different personalities, which is also quite fun to get to know, you know, how each of them work. And that's part of the job. You know, you have to work so closely with these people. You need to know how they tick. You need to know, you know, when they're uncomfortable in a situation. You know, there's lots of kind of nuance to it. But like ultimately they're both trying to do the same thing. You know, they both need to focus on driving the car and having that time with their engineers and doing a good job on track. And we kind of adapt around that. And at the end of the day, we're like, we kind of just see them as another member of the team. Like, yeah, we have to, I know, like Lando and Oscar are loved across the world. And Oscar, obviously, the more people get to see of his personality, the more they're sort of loving him as well. But on a day-to-day basis, you know, they're just another member of the team to us. You know, we are one team and we're sort of all colleagues and there's a mutual respect. And we kind of just have to kind of get on with it and almost forget about the rest.
And Sophie, you are comms boss at McLaren. You are in charge of communication. Therefore, a lot of people want to know, did Lando get in trouble for asking Lance Stroll if he can yet on the first episode of Drive to Survive? Because then a very popular meme went round of, oh, Lando's comms team. Here we have Lando's comms team. So for the exclusive line, did Lando get a telling off from Sophie Ogg?
I mean, I couldn't possibly comment on that. Other than to say there were a number of conversations that went on between McLaren and Aston preparing for this coming out. We do try to remind them when the boom appears, stop talking.
Very interesting.
That Netflix boom is everywhere.
Interesting insight into the Netflix boom. What about the Fast and the Curious microphone when stupid jerks with microphones ask your drivers if it would be a good thing if Hamilton won at Mercedes before he goes to Ferrari? What did you make of Oscar's reaction and the then viral moment where he sassed us out of the race circuit?
I think Oscar was on the money there, wasn't he? He's very quick and I think he nailed it with his response. And I think it was a very good answer. We're very proud of him.
And have we ruined any chances of getting Oscar back on, or is he still very much on side as a co-host?
Absolutely. You can have Lando and Oscar. We love you guys. We would never stop you having access.
Hey!
Well, can you tell the trolls that then?
Yeah, don't push your luck too much then, because there will be a limit.
Sophie, we know you're a busy lady, so thank you so much for coming on. You've been amazing.
Oh, thank you very much for having me.
And to say goodbye to Sophie, let's do the Sophie Ogg chant, which is as follows. Oggy, oggy, oggy.
Oi, oi, oi.
See you soon, Sophie.
Bye,
Sophie.
Guys. Thank you.
Just a general good egg. Ogg.
A good og.
A good og. She's just a good og. But I loved what she was saying about her journey into Formula One, yeah. But also how she's seen the landscape changing in terms of more women coming into the sport. Chloe, you have obviously been in the sport for a very, very long time. Since you were so young,
Very long time. She's only 12. She's not been there that long.
but she's been doing it since she was a baby, pretty much, haven't you?
Yeah.
Do you sort of agree with what Sophie was saying? Have you seen similar things?
Yeah, I completely agree with what Sophie was saying. I mean, I sort of found myself like really nodding along when she was speaking, because when she speaks about not seeing it as much of an issue with there not being too many women, I completely agree with that. I mean, when you're in motorsport, you're kind of just focused on yourself and your own progression and what you're doing. So you're not really thinking, am I one of the only girls? Is there not enough? All this kind of thing, you know, you're not really worried about it. But it's still, like you said, see the progression in recent times and the amount of women that are coming into it. I mean, I definitely see it from a driver's perspective as well. Like, sort of the grassroots in karting, I've seen a lot of younger girls coming into karting now. So it is fantastic to see that progression. But when you begin in the sport, especially at a younger age, you're really not worried about like the male-female ratio. So yeah.
No, of course not. It's interesting, isn't it? The perspectives of different generations. But if you look at Formula One at the moment, there's not a single female team principal. Yeah. There's not a female driver currently in F1. So hopefully, you hope what happens is an influx of people your age and people who are now younger than you coming into the sport. In a few years' time, you'll see the knock-on effect, because the Zak Browns, the Toto Wolffs, the Christian Horners, they're old.
Yeah.
Okay? So you're going to have to wait. People have to wait their turn for experience and everything, but hopefully that's building in the background and one day we're going to get that.
I mean, hopefully. I mean, I think definitely as I've grown up in the sport and I've obviously started to notice these kinds of things a bit more, the the definition of having, you know, a winning team, a champion team, you do have to have that mix of women and men, and it's most likely possibly never going to be exactly equal. It's never going to be 50-50. But to have a good mix of women in there, I think it can really make the difference in likes of strategy, engineering decisions. I think it can make a huge, huge impact.
I think it's also like expectations. So obviously, if you see women in bigger roles when you're younger, you'll think, oh, I can do that, and sort of like broadening the horizons. And that's why F1 Academy is so good, right? Because young girls are going to see women racing in a sort of a big competition alongside Formula One this season. So, I mean, it's sort of only getting better, isn't it?
Yeah, exactly. I mean, likes of F1 Academy, like you say, I think I didn't realise until last year how much of an impact us girls being in those roles. And I mean, it wasn't just the 15 female drivers, there was also engineers and mechanics that were female. And like you say, I didn't realise how much of an impact that can have on the younger generation. And it kind of hit me at the last round at COTA in Austin, Texas, because we did a driver signing in front of the main stage. And you know, just working your way along and signing like you would with anyone, but I got to this one girl, and when she saw me, she burst into tears, and I was like, but I'm like, it just like, I'm just a person, you know, it's very strange. And she was just filled with so much emotion, and it was kind of, you know, really, really meaningful, really moving, to see the impact that all of us can actually have on the younger generation. And it's definitely proven a lot to me that I didn't expect as well.
For a long time, Formula One has been presented in terms of the TV coverage from the paddock, and that was the case in sort of the second half of my childhood when I was watching it. I used to watch like Jim Rosenthal on ITV, and Steve Ryder stood in the paddock.
Legends.
But you looked behind them in the sort of heart of the sport, the paddock, and it was all male faces. And now we're in a position where you look behind you, and it's, yes, there's still mostly male faces, but you see people like Sophie, who have important jobs in Formula One and are female, and you look around the paddock now, and it is getting better. There is some more diversity, a lot of thanks to the likes of Lewis Hamilton and people pushing it. There is more women. You know, I've spoken a lot about being gay, and that there are more LGBTQ plus people in motor racing now. So that's all fantastic. And you will just see it from watching the TV coverage behind Simon Lazenby. There's more people and think, oh, there's a woman, so I can do this. But the best possible example of it is, as Chloe's just been saying, is the racing. And what I loved in COTA last year was when I went round to speak to the fans, and the fans were saying, you know, where obviously the first time F1 Academy raced alongside F1, it was like, yeah, we're going to watch this series, we're going to watch a bit of this. Oh, and then we've got F1 Academy, which we're really excited to watch. And it's just there. And the fact that it's women isn't important. It's just another racing series. So 5-6-year-olds who are doing what I did and seeing their mums and dads watching the telly will all of a sudden just see it as completely normal that there's a female racing series. And that is what ultimately will change it. That in 20 years' time, those 5 or 6-year-olds, you know, will be in the sport properly.
Well, it must be exhausting for you to talk about it, no?
Like,
it's like the fact that it's not, that there's not a default. Like, the default is bloke. That's the annoying thing. And that will change one day. So this conversation is just stop, and it's just completely, it's completely normal. Is that not right?
Yeah, fingers crossed. Hope so. It's definitely going in the right direction, isn't it? But it's just got to be a normal thing.
But that's I think it's important to pick up on Greg's point, because I see this when athletes come out as gay, and you get people, why do we need to even talk about it? Because it's unusual.
Yeah.
And we'll need to keep talking about it until it's not unusual. There will be a time when it is completely normal, but we're not there yet. So until then, we need to keep talking about it, because I believe it's really important to do so.
Well, that, I feel like, is a nice place to end today's Fast and the Curious. Chloe, it's been so nice to have you in the studio, signing the helmet.
Thank you for having me once again.
First helmet signature, didn't it look good?
Talking all about the F1 Academy, talking about your exciting next season. We have got everything crossed, and we're going to do whatever we can to support you.
Thank you.
On your journey, because it is a journey.
Thank you.
And we've signed you up for another year on this podcast.
Yes,
anyway.
Contract is done.
So that's sorted.
No getting out now, Chloe. You're stuck with us.
And all I ask from you is £400,000 a season.
You pay us to do the podcast, okay?
And you've got your seat. That's as simple as that. It's got to pay half a million.
And hopefully, we'll bring you £401,000 of sponsorship. Yeah, and if you
can
are
I just
a rich
know,
listener,
I don't need that much. My seat does not cost that much,
no,
but
you
still,
need 400 grand,
I wouldn't complain.
Yeah. Your team told you you're looking at about £385,000. That's sort of what you, that's the ballpark figure, isn't it?
We're very, very happy to have you here. If you've got any questions for us, you can send them to all your usual places. Social media, you'll find us. And thanks for watching on YouTube. By the way, if you just realised that, you can watch this on YouTube now. And we'll be back after...
Jeddah.
After so, the Saudi Arabian Grand Prix.
See Jeddah later.
That's no. Even that by this podcast standard, that doesn't work.
I loved that, Greg.
See Jeddah later. That.
When you said Jeddah, it sounded like you're from Yorkshire. You're like, Jeddah.
Jeddah cheese.
Anyway, let's wrap.
Anyway, see you later. We've got to go now. Bye-bye.